Welcome to another episode of the Thereafter Podcast. Your host, Cortland Coffee here, along with my co-host, Josh Annemeyer. Josh, say hello.
Happy to be here. Again.
We are excited to be bringing you another episode. We are still on the every other week model at the moment. It's working for us, although I really hope we can get back to an every week model once things maybe slow down a little bit and we have a little bit more time that we can put into it. In the meantime,
I'm digging it though.
Yeah, if you tell people that you know about the show so that we can get more listeners, that'll help us have a little bit more of motivation to start doing an every week thing, because I liked doing the every week, but it's tough. You know, weeks go fast, faster and faster every single week that goes by, it feels. So,
yeah. Well, plus it's also, I mean, we both got our busy day jobs as well. So,
yes. Yeah.
Get it in.
We are not making, you know, that big podcast money that's out there and accessible to us at some point, but, today we have a really cool guest. I'm really excited.
Yeah, today we have a really great guest. And some of you listeners out there are wanting to hear more about who we're talking about before we actually start talking to them. So we did a little homework. And Cortland, who are we talking to today?
We are talking to Dr. Katie Blake. And Dr. Katie Blake is a PhD in social psychology. She is smarter than three Josh and Cortland's put together. And she has a 500-hour master level yoga instructor certification, 13 years of experience in teaching psychology and yoga. She does a ton of work online with women, specifically in deconstruction and in the deconstruction space. We were just talking about her incredible content on Instagram.
Yes.
Really, really great content. And
it's beautiful. It's so well put together.
Well designed.
We're
suckers for good graphic design.
Yes.
You put a good design on something and I'll endorse it. But she also just has a lot of really great things to say. And I really enjoyed the conversation because I felt like we were getting like immense value. Like I felt like we owed her money. We'd make that joke after talking to her, because it really was helpful for both Josh and I, you know, personally, just the wisdom that she has and shares with us today. So I was super into it. I loved this episode.
Roll it.
All right, another episode of the Thereafter Podcast. Your host, Cortland, here, along with my co-host, Josh. Josh, say hello.
Hey.
And we are here, so honored, privileged to be here with Dr. Katie Blake. Katie, say hello.
Hi, everyone. Good to be here. I'm so honored and grateful to be here.
Yeah, we're...
Thanks for being here. The doctor's in the house.
In the house.
Doctor's in the house. I love that. So... Katie is somebody that I met through Clubhouse, I believe, is our first point of contact. And now I follow her on Twitter and Instagram and any other platform I can find to get more of her content in my life. And why don't, you know, to start out, I would love for you to just have, you know, kind of a brief introduction to you and your background, maybe specifically your kind of history of faith. To some extent, like whether you grew up in church. The point of the podcast, kind of our ethos, is talking about, you know, life after faith change, and really specifically the fear that I felt and the perceived and real isolation that I felt when going through the process of reconstructing or changing the way I thought about things. So kind of with that in mind, you want to tell us, like, did you grow up a person of faith, or what's your relationship to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I resonate with a lot of that already, just the fear and the isolation for sure. So I grew up in the church. I've actually been starting to publicly say this, so I guess I'll say this here, but I grew up in the Church of Christ stream. So everybody goes when I say that, okay. Probably if you know what it is, very traditional, like women don't do anything, that involves adults. We don't have instruments in our services, like super, super traditional. I didn't grow up in churches that were comparatively as traditional, but my family of origin definitely has that history for sure. So I can't remember if we've been in a clubhouse room where I've shared some of just the toxic situations I had growing up as a kid, but there are definitely those sprinkled in, and we can unpack that if that interests you. But I went to college at a state school and found myself there where I had less friends who went to church, or wait, I should say I had more friends who did not go to church than I did friends who did, right? And that was kind of a breath of fresh air, and it gave me an opportunity to try out different denominations, and went to a really diverse school, and so made a lot of friends from different backgrounds, having grown up in a really small town. And
what part of the country did you grow up in? And you don't have to give us specifics, like your, you know, childhood address, but.
I'm originally from Tennessee, but I grew up in Texas mostly. And I went to UT Austin. And when I ended up there, you know, the diversity there is just so beautiful. And I am so grateful for that experience. Ended up kind of stepping out of the Church of Christ. Then went to graduate school in Houston, again, another amazing, beautiful city. Went to graduate school at U of H, which is one of the most diverse colleges in the nation. I'm so grateful for that. And at that time, though, I found myself back in this Southern Baptist stream. And so there's that as well. And then, I ended up marrying a minister in the Church of Christ, kind of stumbling onto him. And we got married, and he was serving at a church at the time, and served with him in ministry. Then he decided to leave formal paid ministry to start a small business. At the time, he was going to start a salsa business and grow organic peppers and tomatoes, and we were going to like feed kids in Kenya. It was this really cool idea. That business is no longer, but all of that to say that after he left to start that small business, just the bottom fell out for me. I think really all of my life, I've been a little deconstructionist, right? Just kind of asking questions, whether publicly or privately. But once our paycheck was no longer dependent upon what I believed and what I publicly proclaimed, everything just kind of started to tumble and
to change. I can relate so much to that. And I actually just like kind of was brought back to that this last week, listening to John Steingard talk about his experience of, you know, kind of settling down and stopping being in the Christian music scene and the freedom. I mean, I remember leaving ministry as well when you don't really realize, I didn't realize how much that paycheck and that livelihood that came from having correct belief was restricting what I thought and how much freedom came from that. So I can relate so much.
Wait, yeah. You got a paycheck?
Well, yeah. I mean, I use that term roughly. It's a loosely used word.
That's
more
real.
About that another time.
Yeah. And so that's when I began what I would call my formal deconstruction. I didn't know what it was called at the time. I thought I was the only person on the planet. Sometimes I thought the things I believed about the Bible and the questions I was asking were me on an island alone, and that no one else could possibly feel this or think this. And I navigated that for a while until I stumbled on a podcast. So this is why I love podcasts, because I did not know anyone who created this podcast or was involved with this podcast, but it really helped me not feel alone. And I was too afraid to talk to anyone about it. I didn't talk to my husband about my changing beliefs for years. And that podcast was a lifeline for me. And it allowed me to just realize, oh my gosh, there is this body of people out there doing this thing. And there's even a label for it. And it's called deconstruction. And that was really super liberating for me.
Yeah, I can relate to that as well. And podcasts have been like good friends since leaving, formal church community for me. And I've kind of since wandered back into different aspects of formal church community. But it's such a powerful, resource that I'm just so grateful that this generation has access to, because, you know, I imagine, you know, people who went through this process, there was obviously people going through this process pre-internet and, you know, before we could get on to Instagram and really see, oh my gosh, there's all these other people who think like me. I'm curious, you know, from my perspective, and tell me if there's anything that I'm asking that's too invasive, only share what you're comfortable sharing. But you mentioned that, like, you didn't, you know, initially have this conversation even with your husband. I can, you know, relate to that aspect of being married and being married in ministry and then going through this change. And that was a really difficult, what was your feeling in terms of, like, oh, how is this, was there fear around that aspect of what is this going to affect my relationship? Maybe talk about, like, a little bit about how that felt, or.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll preface all of my story by saying that this is the number one thing I hear from women specifically, is that the last shoe to drop for them is to talk to their spouse. Because they're so afraid. They're afraid of what their husbands specifically are going to think, especially if they're married to someone in ministry. I mean, I hear this all the time. So for me, absolutely. I think when you're in deconstruction, it's super lonely. I mean, unless you're already invested in a community, like in person, I think, who is doing this thing, and maybe somebody kind of pulls you along in that. If you just stumble upon it yourself, which most people do, right? It's usually a personal experience or something just happens in your story. It's so ostracizing and lonely and isolating, like you said. And so the last thing you want when all of these other relationships are crumbling is for your relationship with your spouse to also crumble. And also, it's really hard to articulate what's going on in deconstruction and what you believe. And that's the first question people want to ask you, is what do you believe? And oftentimes you don't even know. And so how do you start that conversation anyway? So yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I come from a background of studying relationships and psychology and what makes healthy and unhealthy relationships. And really, honestly, to me, the number one thing is communication and relationships. And I just learned that the hard way in this. Well, just to encourage anyone, you know, for years, I thought, oh my gosh, what's he going to think? And Brené Brown talks about this a lot, like the stories in my head, yes. The stories I was telling myself, he's going to do this, or he's going to say that, or he's going to think this. And when I finally, you know, came clean, I guess, he was like, and?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you built it up to this place where it was like, oh, okay, that wasn't too painful.
Yeah. And to be honest, after just communicating in that way and doing that, our relationship's really been the best that it's been ever. Just that authenticity and my ability to be real about what I value and what I believe in women's rights and women's roles and all of these things, when before being in a church where those things weren't valued, I was stuffing down essentially myself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you talked a little bit about your college experience and your education. I think it's interesting that, you know, you were on this education path that I feel like has, like, really uniquely equipped you in this conversation. Yet you started that kind of beforehand. I mean, you were obviously going through different transitions from, you know, early childhood to your college education, but how has your study and your education helped and shaped, you know, the way that you're working with people in deconstruction? And we'll talk a little bit about the work that you do. I want you to share some of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been teaching psychology classes at the collegiate level since 2007. So I don't even know how many years, 14 years now, I think. And
yeah. It feels like 5 years ago, but
I know it feels like 5 years ago when you get to be in your late 30s. For anyone listening, just warning you, like, yeah. Live it up now. But yeah, so then I was teaching yoga classes. I'm a certified yoga instructor.
You're certified yoga.
Doing that, and then let's see, about 4 years ago, I think, I started to get the idea to take my teaching online. I'd actually been teaching psychology classes online through colleges and universities for, I think maybe it's 12 years now, since 2010, I believe. So I may not have those numbers fleshly correct, but yeah, so I decided to take my yoga instructor training on teaching online as well. And then I just realized that there was this beautiful intersection of my education, like you're talking about, as far as psychology goes, but then also as far as yoga and mindfulness and meditation, and even for me, just kind of the yoga philosophy that comes along with that, and the ways in which yogis and yoginis approach the world, you know. And then there was this personal experience that I had had. And for me, I've always wanted to do something like above myself. And I've always wanted to help people. And sometimes teaching undergraduate college classes feels like I'm doing that. And sometimes it doesn't. And yeah, all of a sudden I just opened my eyes and I was like, here's a way I can really, really help people. Because I'm not doing this from an angle of, let me tell you how to be and how to feel, because I've been there. But also I'm not doing it from this angle of, yeah, here, I've been there, so do it the way I'm doing it, because I don't have any training in anything else, right? So yeah, I'm really grateful and feel just really kind of lucky that all of these things have come together and have allowed me to have this space to give back to the world. Yeah.
So, I mean, usually we kind of move towards the end and then we kind of talk about what you're doing, but I have so many questions about what you're doing. I want you to share a little bit about like the work that you're doing in the deconstruction space and the women that you're working with. Tell us a little bit about that. And then I have a couple questions in regards to that.
Yeah, for sure. So I primarily do online courses and workshops and group experiences and community experiences with women who are deconstructing. And I center that around giving them psychological tools. So teaching them things like identity and boundaries and some of the stuff that we've talked about, but then also teaching them experiential practices like meditation and mindfulness and embodiment. And for me, I was trained to view the world and to view human issues through the lens of a biopsychosocial model, right? And so what I find oftentimes in deconstruction, and I absolutely had my own time in this space, but it's all about what you believe. Like, what do you believe and what do you think? And I feel like sometimes that misses the mark because it doesn't allow us to talk about how we feel. It doesn't allow us to think about how this is affecting our bodies. And then lastly, again, my real main area of expertise as far as my psychological training goes is relationships and how much we need those healthy, life-giving relationships. And so I just bring all of that together, like mind, body, spirit, and community and that social aspect, to give people a space where they can feel like they belong and they can be honest and authentic and ask questions and that that is welcome and okay.
Yeah, I think that's so important, especially for women and women, you know, coming out of the church or in the church still. I just remember my own mother's story of like, you know, how she was pushed out of her church because she got remarried.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like, wow, that's so crappy, man. But, and she has a hard time. I mean, she has a hard time today, even admitting, you know, when things are wrong, and she's a bottler, you know?
There's something unique about women in general, but also I find in this space that we are more tied to our relationships and our identity. So we actually call that relational identity in psychology. And then furthermore, we have something called, or we have a greater capacity for something called relationship contingent self-esteem. So not only do I typically tie my identity to my relationships, like I'm a sister, I'm a friend, I'm a daughter, but my self-esteem is dependent upon those relationships. So as a woman, when those relationships fall, or there are issues, or there's conflict, my self-esteem suffers in that way. And for men, you guys are awesome because you can compartmentalize that stuff. And so if you have a problem with the relationship over here, it doesn't affect your worth. It doesn't affect your work. It doesn't affect all these other things that might be a part of your life. But for women, it's just so fluid in that sense. So when we go through deconstruction, I find that, and I don't think it's like better or worse or harder or anything like that. But I find that for women, that's the big thing that they're always talking about, is that now I don't have any friends. I don't have any relationships. And so thanks for sharing that story about your mom, because that's foundational. I mean, that can rock you to your core when your church rejects you. And then where do you go if that's your entire social support system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned the Southern Baptist, and that's the tradition that I grew up in a very, you know, fundamentalist, you know, the church context I grew up in wasn't particularly fundamentalist, but my dad, is a proud fundamentalist, like will claim the label. And there were two things that I think are pivotal aspects of your story that I was taught to have major doubt in, and that is psychology. I mean, I remember a book being passed around our church when I was young, like literally called like Why Christians Shouldn't Trust Psychology, I believe was the title or something very close to that. So there was a major distrust of psychology and a basically erasure of, you know, even dealing with mental health issues. Secondly, you know, when you talk about yoga and you talk about embodiment, like that was also something that was just major distrust of anybody telling you to get in your body. What type of experience have you had working with people, and do people share those hangups that I clearly brought out of my childhood?
100%. Absolutely. And, you know, I think I share that as well, where, you know, we're taught not to trust our emotions. We're taught not to trust our minds. Like, we want to talk about beliefs and what you're supposed to think, but like, here is the rule book. So you just sign off on that, get in line, right? And if anything strays from that, don't listen to it. You know, it's just tickling your ears or whatever. And then same thing with your body, you know, because those two things can be intertwined. Where if you're sensing an emotion, sometimes that's coming straight from your body first before you even have a thought about it. And that's why I think it's so important and so imperative that we have this holistic approach to deconstruction, where good and great, I'm an Enneagram 5, so I love to get in weeds. Right on. Are you a 5 too?
My wife is a 5 and I am a 9. Nice. So I don't even know what I'm feeling. I might find out 2 months from now.
Yeah. Typically, whatever the Enneagram number next to you is feeling, right?
Yeah, that's funny. That's my marriage too. I'm a 5 and my husband's a 9. And so it gets dicey. Yeah, but, you know, so I want to know all the things. And so I want to take a deep dive in Ecclesiastes and what did that actually mean? And dissect things and tear them apart. And what does the Hebrew word mean there? And how are we using it incorrectly? And what did Paul really say? What was he really saying when he said X, Y, or Z? So all of that is so important and exciting and interesting to me, but it misses a big piece of the whole picture, I think, when we don't encompass that with, okay, how can I also be emotionally agile and think through what I'm feeling and process my emotions and listen to those things and talk about those things? And the embodiment piece is really helpful for that, because our minds and our bodies are so intertwined, it's really impossible to tease them apart. And like I said before, when you're feeling an emotion, sometimes that's rising out of your body. And so to learn to listen to your body is so helpful for spaces in which you feel chaotic, you feel like the bottom is falling out from underneath you, you're not sure what is up and what is down. To have those tools can be really helpful for just finding that groundedness to be able to step into, okay, now what do I believe? And oftentimes, I know I experienced this, I jumped into the knowing and how can I use the Bible to support my deconstruction? Or how can I tear it apart so that I can make it like it doesn't mean anything, right? And discount it and discredit it. But to have that really strong foundation of being able to listen to your emotions and being able to regulate your emotions and have grounding rituals and rhythms and practices in your day, whether it's meditation or it's drinking a cup of coffee mindfully or whatever, that helps us feel more centered when everything's shaky and it's not solid ground.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a correlation between not being mindful, not practicing mindfulness, and opening yourself up to abuse and abusive situations?
Yeah, I'm going to sit with that just for a second. But my first answer is yeah. Absolutely, because when we get tied up in that idea of here's just what we do, and we get in line, and we as human beings are very invested in relationships. We need relationships. We need to feel like we belong. This will show my Enneagram 5 a little bit, but one of my favorite psychological studies and theories is this idea of the belongingness theory. We all need those things. And so when we can't be in tune with how we feel, our personal experience of life, what our body is saying to us, because sometimes our body does speak, right? Then we find ourselves in, okay, well, this is just what I'm supposed to do. I'm just supposed to stay in this relationship or in this church. And I don't want those people to reject me. I don't want them to dislike me. So I am just going to go along with the flow, because we aren't listening to ourselves. And I know that can sound heretical too, but for me, that is a huge first step, is to be able to learn how to be mindful and listen to yourself and have that strong sense of identity and authenticity, and to be able to ultimately just belong to yourself first, where it's good that I like me, and it's good that I am okay and approve of what I'm doing. And so if anyone else is rejecting or ostracizing or not okay with how I'm living my life, ultimately I can decide whether that matters or not and whether I want to leave or not. And I resonate with your question, because that was absolutely me in our church for a long time, is how do I make this thing work? And listening to what other people were telling me to do. Oh, don't be angry. Don't be bitter. You sound resentful. Don't be those things. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, these are the authority figures. So I guess I need to just get in line and do the things that I'm supposed to do that are on the list of, this is what we do here. And, I didn't listen to myself very well. And when I began to cultivate those tools and I began to do that really well in my life, it was heartbreaking that I was still in that space. You know, the big question was, why am I still here? This is ridiculous. Mm. Yeah. So do you have a follow-up question to that? That's a super great question.
Yeah, that's insightful.
Well, I just think that, I mean, I've always had problems with like understanding my own thoughts about things. And I feel like when I left the toxic church situation I was in, me and my wife, we left in between services. It was great.
I remember that second service was weird. It's an awkward one.
I just felt like what happened where I got duped so bad, you know? And I was just, I made a commitment to myself to not be duped again, you know, and I want to do all this research. And that's when I found podcasts and how, cause I can't afford to go to college, cause I didn't get paid for 4 years. So, so that's where my education lied. But, yeah, no, it's super important.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, I'd just like to say not to be hard on yourself and don't feel like you did something to get yourself duped. You're a human being. And like I said, we as humans, we're tribal in nature. We need people. We need to feel like we belong. And that is evolutionary. And it's also just a part of our DNA. We're just hardwired for that connection. And so you were just doing the right thing. You know, you were just doing the thing that humans do. And what I find oftentimes is that churches are preying on that. And I don't know that they're conscious of it necessarily always, but I do think there is a light that is being shed on these spaces now where we're recognizing that community is not the end all be all. And what I like to always say is that not all community is good community. Mm-hmm. Like community can be really life-giving, but I'm not interested in community just for community's sake. I'm interested in myself and other people finding spaces where they do find that life. And, you know, spaces like churches, they know this. And again, I don't know that it's necessarily conscious, but they're structured in a way that keeps you there, right? And that is not something that you did wrong, I wouldn't say, or a mistake that you made. Gosh, that is a story I hear over and over and over again, and one that I share with you. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was great.
That's beautiful. I mean, it's healing to me to kind of like watch, you know, that conversation and have, you know, this conversation here on the podcast about that, because I think that there is, and maybe, you know, this is something you can speak even more to for me in my therapy that, you know, I will be in for the rest of my life. Significantly, I'm dealing with and talking about a lot of shame that I didn't realize that I had. And I don't think that it is necessarily that it was intentional, but I realized like from a very, very early age, I was just given this shame viewpoint and perspective. And as an Enneagram 7, of course, I just shove it all down, ignore it, and pursue, you know, whatever will distract me from it. Talk a little bit about maybe some of the folks you work with and addressing that shame, that self-blame that can come as you begin to kind of go like, shit, man, my beliefs are different. And then you kind of almost feel guilty for believing something that you used to believe as you change your belief.
Yeah, Brené Brown is such a big teacher for me in this. And for me, she talks a lot about the differences between shame and guilt and something that we do to ourselves and that we also do as a culture to our kids and that we ultimately experienced as kids. We don't necessarily guilt people. Guilt is like, oh, you did something wrong, so apologize for it. Like, we want to be good about apologizing to other people and to ourselves. I think that's really important too. But shame is you did something wrong, so you're a bad person. And I think what I find oftentimes when I'm talking with people who have come from fundamentalist backgrounds, specifically, you know, fundamental Christianity, it has moved into that space where I did this or I did that, or I learned that if I made a mistake or stepped out of line, I'm a bad person. And so now that one is deconstructing and they are making these big changes that other people don't like, that they're labeling as mistakes or they're labeling as wrong or heretical or evil or backsliding or whatever, we have been socialized now to internalize that as there's something bad about me and there's something wrong with me. And it's similar to Josh's question in the sense that it's very difficult for us to tease that apart and realize, hey, that's just a decision that I'm making. I could be wrong about this. I could be right about it and you could be wrong. But it's very difficult for us to tease that apart from our identity and who we are. And that if we make a misstep or a mistake, that we're a bad person. But for me too, something that I love to share with the women that I'm working with is just releasing that need for certainty and embracing that idea of uncertainty and being willing to say, I don't know, and I may be wrong, but this is the path I'm going to take right now. And when I discover that it's the wrong one, I'll make a right turn, right? And I think that helps us extract that shame out of it. So there's kind of a couple of things that I see in your question there. So I hope that answered it.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I think it is, you know, that course correction and that freedom to have that course correction is just so counter to the ideology that I grew up in. It was such an arrival based, you know, theology and ideology, and it was like you need to arrive in this place. And I think it's funny. I remember talking to Kevin Garcia on the episode that we did with them. It brought up all of this kind of, I feel all this guilt and shame about, you know, I became affirming and then I was like, but I was not affirming for so long. And now I feel all the shame about how I was, or what about all these people that I got, you know, kind of signed up for this religion that now I'm no longer a part of, and being able to realize, like, kind of what you said is like, in that moment, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was genuinely doing what I believed was right. Mm-hmm. That's so, I think, difficult for me and for a lot of people who I talk to, we've been conditioned to have this kind of fixed view, this fixed worldview, that isn't kind to ourselves and creates a lot of stress and can oftentimes make me into a post-religious fundamentalist. And I don't want to be that person. Josh and I land in different places in our faith, and that's a conversation we're constantly having. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure that you work with people in different stages of deconstruction or reconstruction. How do you help people, or what would your advice be to people who are maybe in relationship where they're at different points on the map, and still trying to be authentic and genuine within those relationships, even though they may land in different places?
Yeah, that is one of the most important things to me. I'm showing up to exist in the world not to tell you what to believe. I'm 0% interested in doing that. Most days, I don't even know what I believe. And I've come to this sweet spot where sometimes it's not that I don't care, but it's just kind of like it doesn't really matter a lot of the times. And so I think one of the things I would say as far as relationships go is having two things. Being willing to step into your authenticity and recognize that ultimately that is more important than anything. That's something I talk about a lot. Because when you can't be authentic, it's really damaging psychologically, physiologically. And then secondly, it's exercising, practicing, knowing how to set good boundaries. That is not something I was taught in the church, especially. And it's okay sometimes when someone's asking you, hey, what do you believe about Genesis? Which is a silly example, but if you're not willing to talk about that, say no. Or say, hey, I am really appreciative that you're curious about that. You know, I don't know that I'm there today to talk about that issue. Why don't we talk about this? Or another great tool that I've learned that works really well is when someone asks you a question that you're not willing to answer, you're not comfortable answering in that relationship. A lot of times you can just say, hey, what do you believe about that? Because something we know is that people love to talk about themselves. And oftentimes they won't even notice that you've kind of sidestepped the question and handed the ball to them. They're just like, oh, great, I get to talk about me, you know? And so those are two things that I find really helpful. But it also makes me think of just the two things that you were talking about there, is this idea of growth mindset. And I'm curious if you are familiar with that, because you used the term fixed. But that's something that I talk about a lot, is having this spiritual growth mindset. So for anyone who's listening, growth mindset is an idea that came from a researcher named Carol Dweck. And initially, she defined this term, this idea, in terms of like kids' development and education. So you're either good at math or you're bad at math, right? That would be a fixed mindset. A growth mindset in that area might be, okay, you're not Michael Jordan, but maybe head out to the basketball court and keep trying and trying, and you could cultivate enough skill to, I don't know, maybe get on the team in college, right? That would be an example of a growth mindset. So I have a mentor and a colleague who took that research and translated it into relationships, and this idea of believing that we are either destined to be with someone or friends with someone or in an intimate relationship with them, or I can choose someone in the world. And it takes effort, takes commitment. There will be conflict, but we can work through it and we will grow our relationship into something if it's not what I want it to be in that moment. So for me, I've kind of followed that stream and I've found this beautiful space where we can think about our spirituality in that way. Like, do you believe that your beliefs should not change over time? How do you feel when you're presented with new information about God or the divine or the lack of God or your spirituality? Does it make you feel fearful, like you're saying, Cortland? Or does it make you feel excited, like, oh, there's this new thing I can learn? And then how do you feel about yourself in that way? Do you give yourself the ability to flex and move and grow? Because something that we know across the board in psychology is that growth is healthy and change is natural. I mean, even if you just look at the world around you, evolution is the natural essence of the universe. And so why would we expect everything around us should grow and change, but we shouldn't, especially in our spirituality? And that's something I love to talk with people about, is allowing yourself the space to do that internally, but also in your relationships, and to encourage other people to recognize that they can grow in their spirituality as well. And what's really cool, have you guys heard of this book? It's actually, have it right here. It's called How God Changes Your Brain. It's a book by two neuroscientists, and they've studied like prayer and meditation and spirituality. And what they found is that people who spend more time thinking about God or these types of concepts, what God means, what does life mean, what is the purpose of it all, their spirituality and their thoughts and beliefs over time become less clear. So there's this example in the book where they ask people to draw what you think of when you think of God or the divine or just source or whatever the word might be for you. And they find that kids will draw something that's very personified. So maybe a man or something. But then as people age, older adults will draw something that's more growth oriented. Like maybe it's a rays from the sun, or it's just a geometrical shapes, or some people might draw just a circle. And so over time, if people have spent time really thinking about what they believe, what they think, their spirituality, it becomes less clear. And I feel like I want every person that is deconstructing to know that, because we are shamed a lot, Cortland, where it's like we get branded or accused of not being thoughtful, of not thinking things through, of leaving faith without thinking about it and just tossing it to the trash because we haven't really settled into our beliefs or we don't care. And I find the exact opposite. When I talk with people who are deconstructing, their thought processes, their ideas that they have in their mind, what they're doing day in and day out to enter into their spirituality or what they believe about life and what it means to exist on this earth, they're doing that so much more. And in so much more depth and with so much more intention, not to say one's better than the other, but they're very thoughtful people.
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate. I think that it's possible that Mike Maharg may have referenced that book or somebody else that I was either listening to or reading who referenced that. And that's been helpful too to me is, you know, hearing Mike talk a lot about, you know, how God lives in your brain. Yeah. And you know, I identify as an atheist, and yet I still have a God in my brain. You know, that's very well mapped out between all of my, you know, different neuropathways. And I still, you know, I think it's, I talk with people a lot of times about the fact that I still really love to participate in Christian community. I still love a lot of the ritual of liturgy. I still am spiritually impacted by practice, even without having a, you know, this intellectual construct or belief. And I know for a lot of people, they feel a pull to kind of go one side or the other. And they're like, well, you know, if I either need to land in this place of belief and give up all of that, or I need to go ahead and just like commit to the belief so that I can gain this aspect of it. And I love that idea of separating that out and letting it be not clear. Yeah. You know, it's okay to live in that space. So that's beautiful.
I think that what I would like to just ask is I feel like at least in the Western world and in church, in schools, I mean, we are conditioned to think in fixed mentality, you know, like right or wrong, sky is blue. And in the church world, you know, the burden is on you to like save your friend. Right. Or else they're going to go to hell or something. So this is a lot. So how do you break down the walls of a fixed, of all of those years of establishing a fixed mentality? How do you break that? How do you break those walls?
Okay, I'm going to give you all a little secret, a little trade secret.
Nice.
So everybody's getting like, I don't know, like a bonus here today.
Yay.
So Carol Dweck, one of her main exercises that she encourages people to do is to consider, like, what is the most outrageous, like, fear-inducing possibly? Like, what is the most amazing thing that you could do that would stretch you outside of your bounds? And this is something that I do with women that I work with to help them think about this spiritual growth mindset. So let us, like, the one thing that would be so outside the bounds of what you might have done before. You know, you were talking about there's like the psychology is evil, yoga is evil. So maybe like take that list and throw it out or burn it or something. And what is one thing that you could do that would stretch you in this area? And what might grow your faith? And what might help you to become a better person, or the person that you want to be, maybe is the better phrase for that. What would help you become that person that you strive to be? And, you know, so I often tell this story of one time I had heard about Rumi, and I was really interested in Rumi, and the things I heard were amazing, right? But at that time, I was like terrified to buy one of his books, because in my mind, it was probably like dangerous or evil or something, right? And so I ordered this book off the internet, right? And it comes to my house, and I take it out of the package, and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to go put it in the back of my closet. And I did, and it sat there for a while. And then I would kind of take it out eventually and look at it, and then I would put it back. You know, it just felt wrong. But over time, I would take the book out a little bit more, and it's kind of a silly example, but I think it illustrates the point very well. And now I love Rumi. And Rumi has enriched my life and my spirituality in so many ways, where especially with the concept of death, that's really specific. But he has really helped me. His writings have really helped me to just come to terms with death and what it is, and to be okay with it. And I would have never had that gift, right, if I hadn't stretched myself. And so that is one thing that she does with people that she works with. And I've just kind of morphed it into this. You know, what is it for you? Is it Zazen meditation? Is it Zen Buddhist meditation? Is it something that you wanted to try, but you felt yoga maybe that you felt like was off limits? Because oftentimes I think when we're pulled in some of those ways and we shut ourselves down, right? And we go back to, Josh, like what you were saying, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I'm supposed to believe. Those things are off limits. When we shut ourselves down to that, we shut ourselves down to growth. And we stay in the same spot. And we stay fixed in a sense. And in our spirituality, I mean, who wants to be there? You know, when you really think about it. I mean, whether you're atheist or you're Christian or Buddhist or whatever, I think we all know and recognize that to cultivate ourselves and to cultivate who we are and how we show up in the world and how we interact with our environments and what is around us. I mean, that to me is kind of spirituality. It's like, what do I believe? Sure. But how am I going to spend my time on this planet? And how am I going to exist and just be in this space? And who doesn't want to be thinking about and cultivating and growing that?
That's so, so good. And like, I feel like this idea that the practicing your spirituality in this experimental, open-ended way that gives you a sense of permission to explore. I mean, that's really what I hear from what you're saying is, you know, I know so many people that for them, that was, you know, the Enneagram, honestly. I know that for a lot of people that was tarot or something like that, that was like, oh, this is Satan's playground, basically. and the permission to go like, oh, this doesn't have to necessarily be adopted into the canon of beliefs for my life. It's something that I can play in for a minute, and it's safe to get on to the table. I've been listening to, and I don't know the author's name, and I wish I did know her name, but I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. The book Polysecure. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. It's a book a lot about attachment theory and how that kind of relates in terms of having attached relationships in maybe a polyamorous context. And in that book, one of the things that listening to it has helped me a lot is all the things that she's talking about in terms of relationship dynamics are things that I was like scared. I've been scared to even talk about.
Yeah.
And yet talking about them and talking with my wife about them, it's like, oh, these are things we can talk about without having to draw a 35, 40 year end conclusion. You know, every conversation I had about faith growing up was about the finish line. I mean, it was like your beliefs are all based in, it's funny that you mentioned death, but they were all based in being correct if you die tomorrow. And there was no allowance for like, but what if I live for 30 years? How might this evolve? You know, how might this impact my life? I don't have to live my life as if I'm dying tomorrow all the time. So, that's what I hear you saying. And it's beautiful and really helpful for me.
Yeah, I that's something I'm really passionate about is allowing people to see deconstruction as a really exciting opportunity. You know, reconstruction as a term has gotten a bad rap recently where it's like people are taking it and co-opting it to mean something and other people mean it to...
The Gospel Coalition.
Yeah,
I'll say it out loud.
I'm like, people, in quotes.
Yeah, it's cool. You didn't say it, I said it.
But to me, reconstruction is so exciting because you have this deconstruction experience where the visual for me is that everything has kind of fallen down on the floor. I mean, that was my experience. But what's cool about that is now I get to pick up what works and I get to leave behind stuff that doesn't work. And I get to pick up the different pieces and create this beautiful mosaic of what I want my life to look like. And there's this great Abraham Joshua Heschel quote. I don't know if you're fans of him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
Oh, now you're speaking Josh's language.
All day long. And I'll botch it, but essentially the idea is like your life is a work of art. Mm. Like just think about that for a minute. Like, your life is a work of art. So go create it. And I'm not an artist. Like I can't draw or paint anything. But that excites me. That feels really cool because we're all creative beings, right? And I think what happens a lot of times is when we were supposed to develop identity, that researchers point that period of development back to adolescence. For many people who come from fundamental Christianity, we weren't given the opportunity to do that, right? Because that was kind of a stage of life where there's purity culture and there's all the things and they're teaching us the ways of the world. And instead, we're kind of given a uniform to put on. And we weren't given the opportunity to try on things we enjoy, friend groups, relationships, pastimes, sports or band or choir or whatever it is that we might enjoy. And so what I find so fun is now I get to work with women as adults and also speak to men, too, to say that you get to go do that now. If you weren't given the permission to try things on and to create your own outfit and whatever it was you wanted to wear at that age, you were given the uniform. Now you get to change that out and go figure it out on your own. And to me, that is like, I can't wait to do that, you know, and it will be a constant creation. You know, for many artists, a lot of pieces, like there's never an end to it. They're constantly working on it. And that just is exciting to me. And so I'm still pressing into talking about reconstruction because that's what I think of it to be. I don't think of it to be like you circle back around to like a new improved version of what you had before. It's like whatever the heck you want it to be, you go do it. And it's going to look different from mine. And it'll look different. You know, there's 7 billion people on the earth. There's probably 7 billion different spiritualities if we really thought about it.
Yeah. So,
yours gets to be yours. What do you want it to be? What do you want your life to look like? Who do you want to be? It's a work of art. So go create it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That makes me think. Yeah, it's beautiful. I think it makes me think of Kevin Garcia's white jean jacket story. If anyone who's listening, you should go and look up Kevin's white jean jacket. I think it's in their book and it's that exact thing. Beautiful,
cool.
Beautiful. Why don't you talk a little bit, we're right at the end of kind of our interview time. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more formally about, you know, the opportunities that you have to work with folks, how people can, you know, find your work and get involved and maybe have you help them along maybe their journey if somebody is feeling like, oh, this is what I've needed and this is something that really just makes them light up.
Yeah, so I'm on the socials at Dr. Katie Blake. So that's DR, Dr. Katie Blake, except for TikTok. Like you, the editing, oh man, like all of that just scares me. So I'm not on TikTok. Sorry to burst your bubble. I think I could come up.
I thought you were about to say that you are on TikTok under a different name. And I was like, oh, I have to follow you on TikTok. I was really excited, but maybe someday.
I think I could come up with some like really funny, silly stuff that just like maybe I would only think is funny. But I kind of reserve that just for my own brain. But maybe one day, maybe TikTok one day. I do enjoy watching TikToks, but I'm not on TikTok. Instagram is really kind of my main jam. So DM me there anytime. I'm actually releasing a self-study course next week. And I also have a little kind of insiders membership where we do this thing called reconstruction. And I have guest speakers come in to talk about different deconstruction related topics. And we're just exploring like the yogic tradition or the Enneagram in conflict is something that we actually had this past week. And and we do meditations together and embodiment practices together. And so that self-study course is going to kind of bundle together that membership, that community component with just pre-recorded content. And so I feel like that's a really accessible, great way to kind of get your feet wet and see if you love me or hate me and if I can help you or not. But yeah, I would.
Is that on your website?
It is. It is. So that's drkatieblake.com. And yeah, I would love to hear from anyone who just needs to feel like they're not the only one. I mean, that's the best part of this job, I guess, if you want to even call it that. But there are so many times where people direct message me and they're like, oh my gosh, thank you for giving me the language here. I thought I was the only one doing this. And somehow my account is the first one they've stumbled upon. And for me, that's the greatest gift. So if you're out there feeling like I did, and you're listening to this podcast and you're loving it, but you want to feel like you have, you know, kind of flesh connections with someone, I would love to steer you in helpful spaces, even if it's not in our community.
Yeah, that's so needed. So many people, I feel like, are going to resound and respond to that. So it's so needed. Joshua, did you have a response there?
Oh, no. I just, thanks for coming on this, on our little podcast that we do. I feel like I got a free session.
Yeah. Man. I feel like we owe you money. That's definitely, which no is way. How I want to feel at the end of an interview. Like, I got so much out of it.
No way. I love it. And like I said, I love people who are doing the hard work to have a podcast. That to me is something, like, you were laughing about editing when we began. I don't even know how to start doing that. And I just personally know how you're impacting people and the ways in which you're making people not feel alone. And I just love, you know, I was like looking at your podcast and reading about what you're all about. And I just love it. Just keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That means a ton. You've gassed us up. We're going to keep doing it another few episodes at least.
So. Gas it up.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Dr. Katie, thank you so much for being here. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with a wrap up after we get out of here.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to post-interview, Josh and Cortland. How are you doing, Josh?
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Dude. Yeah. So that, I don't know about you, but listening to Dr. Katie Blake speak some amazing words into my life, like just by answering questions, I don't know, like there was a few times where I was like, man, I'm just going to start crying right now. Cause this is just like speaking to me.
Yeah.
And I think you were there too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was extremely personal and really helpful and healthy for me. And I think I hope that it's one of our most popular episodes, because I think that, you know, the things that she's talking about, similar to, you know, the way Rebecca Sorkin, you know, the things that she was talking about as well, that episode has been our most popular episode, Rebecca Sorkin's episode.
Nice.
And I think that this one too is like these points of healing and these like conversations about wholeness, and about, you know, finding, you know, yourself and your balance, and it's got a hopeful message to it that sometimes I know there's a place, and we definitely have a place for that here, to go like, what the fuck is with this? And this is frustrating, and this is angering, or we're confused here, and all of that is welcome in this space. But it's really, really comforting and nice to have a conversation about how we can heal and have a healthy kind of point of moving forward. And, you know, and she used the word reconstruction, which I know is back and forth for different people, but I really liked her take on that and her perspective.
Yeah, me too. I think sometimes we, you know, in this realm, there's a common element of shame that we all like deal with. And when it's easy to recognize when, I mean, post, you know, post these things happening, it's easy to recognize and give identity to like those outside sources of abuse and things like that. But I feel like we can also beat ourselves up because of our shame and because of our and things. So yeah, and one of the things that she was talking about was like, you know, yeah, don't be that's where you were. Don't be so hard on yourself. And everybody needs to hear that. Like we have the ability to beat ourselves up for the things that we did or the things that we thought
perpetuated.
Bleed. Yep. And I could do that to myself. Like I can say like, oh man, why did this happen? You know, why did I allow this to happen or whatever? But, I don't know. There was a very human element there that she brought and caused me to think about. So it was, man. Wow. That's what I got to say.
It was good. It was good. You know, I'm hopeful that we can get some feedback, you know, if this episode impacted you or, you know, tell us what you thought about it. I love, you know, one of my favorite things coming off of this last week episode and, you know, the previous week's episode, talking to my friends in the DRCK Bad Apple Discord group, is I love the real-time feedback and the ability to have conversation about the episode when, you know, the Dirty Rotten Church Kids crew puts out an episode. And we'd love to hear that. You know, I've worked to try to kind of talk to some other, you know, friends and family and people who I know who listen to get their input and feedback. But if this episode impacted you or made you think about it, you know, hit us on Instagram, get in the comments or get into our DMs and let us know, because it's helpful for us to know as we're planning content and other people to talk to. We have some incredible guests coming up, and we're hopeful that we'll do maybe a couple guest-free episodes as well, just kind of Josh and I processing some of, you know, what we've learned along the way so far. And it's also helpful to know if people are interested in that.
Yeah, right on.
If people would like to know, it's helpful for us to know if that's something you'd be interested in hearing, just Josh and I ramble or not, because we want this podcast to be something that people look forward to and that people get value out of. That's important to us because we are really doing it for ourselves in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But we also want it to be helpful and productive for those who are listening.
Yeah, we do want it to be helpful and productive. We do want to listen to all the guests. What's interesting is like, I mean, you and I, there's a lot that we don't agree about, but
yeah,
I mean, our listeners don't hear about that. But that's okay.
Yeah, no, but one of these days we'll do a throwdown episode and we can position ourselves in different places. Just because I think it is helpful for people to know. We haven't highlighted our differences and we really haven't highlighted our positions. You know, I mean, I talk about my position on things to some extent. You talk about your position on things to some extent, but we've really made this about the guests and about learning from other people's experiences.
Yeah, that's been awesome.
And that's awesome. But I do think it's important for people to know that you can engage with lots of different people from different perspectives, even if you yourself are in different positions. And we even talked about that a little bit with Dr. Katie as well. And I think that's an important piece to this conversation, because we cannot silo ourselves into different camps post evangelical, post you know, maybe abusive religious systems. It's not going to be helpful if we silo and if we further divide and prevent each other from being able to come to the table together and have conversations, even if we're landing in different places there. So I think that's important, and I want to talk about that more. So we'll definitely get into that in some future episodes.
Cool.
So as always, if you are listening and you like the show, the best way to help us is by going over to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a short review and a rating. It's just really helpful for us. Also, you can follow us on Instagram, Thereafter Podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter as well. However, I think my Twitter is probably the place to go if you really want to engage, because the Thereafter Twitter I use far less than I do my own. So mine is mine is Cortland Coffee, and you can just pretend that that is the show Twitter if you want to engage with us on Twitter.
It does work. It works the same.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we're available. Reach out to us. We want to create community, and we want everyone to know that there is hope, there is life, there is community in the thereafter, and we hope that you find all those things while you're wandering around this next 2 weeks out in the thereafter.